turned out the winner when it came to Alaska, the land that I love.
Well, we always have Alaska on our minds, since that is where the canary is outside the mine in terms of climate change's arrival. But today it is Colorado. It seems like just yesterday we were talking about the fires, wildfires burning in Colorado, and how that is most likely tied to climate change, at least the fact that they were so devastating. And now we have just the opposite: too much rain, too much water, and some very serious flooding causing death and destruction. And I just had to do a story on that, and I want to really thank the NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council, for getting our next guest lined up under short notice, and that is going to be Laura Pritchett. She is someone severely affected right in the way of those floods. We're going to find out what it's like to be there and also to get her perspective on what message nature might be trying to send us. In our second half, we'll be speaking with Debbie Friedman. She is the co-founder of a wonderful group that started here locally in Mill Valley, Marin County, the Bay Area where I live, but has national message and lessons perhaps for other concerned mothers concerned about pesticides, concerned about spraying chemicals to get rid of some pests, and also just all the toxins that are in our lives that most severely affect our children. So stay tuned for that. Guarantee it will be interesting. But first, I want to welcome Laura Pritchett to the program. Thanks for joining us on the Green Front, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
I should mention that you are an author.
Yes.
And you've written a book called Stars Go Blue. Is that correct?
Well, that's my next novel. It's due out from Counterpoint Press in June.
Fabulous. Not so fabulous is the weather where you are and what's been going on. I can't even imagine. I'm just, you know, watching it on the news like everyone else, seeing video on the Internet. But there's nothing like actually being there, and so we really appreciate your being available to tell us firsthand what the last couple of days have been like and what's going on right now.
Yeah, you bet. Last year, we were evacuated because of the fires. I know you mentioned that, and now the floods, so it does seem like we're in the middle of a catastrophe. But the last few days have been, you know, frankly, they've been really difficult. It just keeps raining and raining. The sun's out right now, although it just poured a second ago. But the floods were serious and loud and huge, and many people I know have their homes ruined or flooded.
Now, you're in a town called Bellevue. What's the nearest city so we can see where you're at?
The nearest city is Fort Collins.
Mm-hmm.
So we're northwest of that in the foothills. It's a small little town with just one post office and one grange, and we need Fort Collins for our food and other facilities. So for a few days there, it was a trick because we couldn't get there. We couldn't get out of Bellevue.
Hmm. And had you ever seen rain like what came down a few days ago steadily?
No, I'm a Colorado native and I've never seen the river like that. I grew up along the banks of the Kashpapooter River and have worked hard to preserve it and with groups that work for the river. But I've never seen the river like that. I've never seen rain like this, and I know that makes me sound like an old fogey, but really, I've never experienced rain that just wouldn't stop and the clouds wouldn't move. It just kept pouring and pouring.
And yet, as you so eloquently said in your essay that is in this edition of NRDC's magazine On Earth, the storm came so quietly.
It did. We didn't have any 911 calls like we did with the wildfires. You know, and with the wildfires, we could see the sky, and we could see the smoke and the blazes. It started raining, and we were also happy because it had been so hot, and we were in a drought. The temperatures had just been really high, and so we were all glad for several days, but then it just kept raining. And then, you know, everything started flooding very rapidly, very quietly. There was no thunder, no lightning. It just rained and rained.
Now, I understand they're not calling this a 1-in-100-year flood. They're now saying 1-in-1,000-year flood. Is that correct?
That's what I've heard. I've heard it's gone above the 100-year floodplain in regions, especially to the west of me in the mountains. And, you know, the roads right around me, the water undercut all the roads, and many of the roads have just tumbled in to stream beds and creeks. So certainly the infrastructure wasn't prepared for this kind of flood.
So was it both the steadiness of the rain and also just the amount of rain coming down that got you, I guess, up to about 9 inches, which is more than half of your annual average just over the last few days?
That's right. It was just the rain, but also the reservoirs started topping over, and they needed to release water in order to hold them or to keep them, I guess. I don't know exactly what was going on, but the water was topping over all the reservoirs, and they had to release it into the river, and the river did what rivers will do, which is create its own course.
Yeah, what happened to you and your family and your neighbors? I imagine you all evacuated.
Well, I did, because I had been evacuated in the fire, I really didn't want to go unless I really had to. I mean, I'm not going to put my family in danger, but it's hard to be homeless and wayward and, you know, living in a shelter or in a hotel room or something. So I was resisting at all costs. So I did not evacuate. We had many neighbors who did, and we had our stuff packed up. You know, I found the passports and the photos and was ready to load up the chickens and the golden retriever and everything that we loaded up last summer. But I didn't have to leave, and I'm glad.
Okay, you didn't. And do you have running water? Are services coming back yet?
We did fill up bathtubs and pots and pans because we heard reports that the pipelines might be contaminated, and in that case they were going to shut off water. But we're lucky in that we maintained electricity for most of it and maintained water throughout. I know towns like Estes Park, you know, they're completely without water and power, and that's hard.
And I see in your article you mentioned your parents who live downriver from you. What was their fate?
Well, they have a beautiful farm/ranch along the banks of the Poudre River. Their house didn't get flooded, but the bridge right near them is out, so I can't get in to see them unless I drive all the way in an enormous circle all the way through Fort Collins and all the way back in a different route. But they lost several acres, you know, the river rerouting itself, really, and a lot of their irrigated pasture land has now tumbled into the river. And I think they're probably good-natured about that. Nature will do what nature will do, and rivers do need to flood and reroute sometimes.
Well, what do you think, and what do you think, you know, your fellow residents think in terms of, is this nature just doing what nature does, or, you know, are we humans somehow adding some fuel to the fire, pardon the expression?
Oh, we're adding it. I think, I didn't mean to say, you know, nature will do whatever. You know, I've worked hard, and I write about fracking and a lot of environmental issues myself, actually. There are 19,000 active oil and gas wells of fracking in Weld County, which is right near us, and of course I think the activities that we've been engaged in are contributing to these strange weather patterns. Absolutely.
And that is exactly the warning that nature is trying to give us. That's the title of your piece, Nature's Warnings Amid the Deafening Din and Startling Stillness of Colorado's Deadly Floods. There's a message for us.
Absolutely.
So if we listen real carefully, what should we be hearing right about now?
Well, I think you'll be hearing what we all know. I might be preaching to the choir, but we just need to move away from our dependence on oil and find renewable energy sources. I have two children. I'm really worried about what is in store for them.
Indeed. And I turn on CNN these days, it almost feels like you're watching the Weather Channel between the extreme weather. Luckily, we've been spared. Well, we in California seem to be spared a lot. But, you know, it's a little hotter and a little windier, but can't complain really overall. But, you know, the hurricane season has not been as bad as might have been expected. But it doesn't mean that we're not seeing extreme weather events occurring on a too regular basis. I mean, even this horrendous fire, when it first happened on the New Jersey shore last week, I said, well, at least this is one thing we don't have to blame on climate change, whatever. It sounded like it was human caused. And sure enough, actually, it's tied to Hurricane Sandy. And the superstorm knocked out the electrical, messed up the electrical wiring. And now they're saying that's probably what sparked this devastating fire. Imagine those poor people having to rebuild again.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we're going to rebuild, we need to be so much smarter. And you know that, and I do too. We do,
and listeners to this program, of course, do, and that's part of the problem. How do we reach the non-choir? And we've just met on this phone call, this interview, but I've been working for 15 years trying to get more, you know, of a national syndicated voice out there to the rest of America so progressives don't, you know, just find the show on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
And we love it, and the Greens don't just find the Green shows, but that folks watching some mainstream or listening to some mainstream station all across America might understand what's at stake for them and their families, and to really start connecting the green dots. Exactly. We are, I'm sure, talking to people who understand this threat. That's why they listen. But, you know, the challenge is, and I don't know if you have any ideas or thoughts on this, is how do we, you know, get out to the masses, the main
audience.
So
yeah.
It's not just the margins, and it's not just something that people think, average citizens, either the government will be looking out for this and taking care of it, or the environmental activists will, the tree huggers, or technology will save us, that it's really arrived, climate change, much sooner and more violently than even the experts had predicted, and we best heed the warnings.
Absolutely. As a freelance writer, I work a lot for magazines that are known in the environmental world, Orion and High Country News and so on, and On Earth, which is a wonderful magazine.
Yes.
But I also try to write for the glossies or the non-environmental magazines, because I feel like that's one small place where I can try to reach the others who perhaps normally wouldn't be listening. But I do think weather events like that has surely got to be, perhaps I'm an optimist, but surely I think this is getting people's attention.
Mm-hmm. I happened to be at a Commonwealth Club event the other night on environment and media, and, you know, editors and reporters on a panel lamenting the fact that, you know, there's less coverage and things are changing, which everyone knows. But someone in the audience said, you know, you're always telling us when you do cover climate and other environmental challenges what the problems are, but you never tell us what we can do about it. How are we supposed to know that? And Paul Rogers, who is the editor, science and environment editor at the San Jose Mercury News, a major publication in Northern California, said, well, that's up to the Sierra Club, not us. And that really struck me, because I have long felt that somewhere between the wonderful, wonderful environmental organizations, and NRDC has always been top of my list, truly, not only because they were partnering with us when we were back on Air America about 5 years ago, but just because they're so on, you know, the cutting edge, as are many others. But the membership of NRDC that would read On Earth, and the membership of Sierra Club that would listen to their radio show, you know, they're the ones who are already concerned, already tuning in to their environment, if you will. And if the journalists are not going to talk about what we need to do differently, you know, where do adults in this country learn about this? Our kids are learning by default, and also some environmental education curriculum starting up in schools all the way up through college, which is great. But I wonder where, you know, folks are just supposed to learn what needs to happen quickly.
Well, one might be by becoming a member and subscribing to these magazines, you know. But,
yes,
you know, and
there's
voting,
course,
voting. And voting with your purchases. There are things people can do. I know it's hard to always keep those in mind, but we have to keep trying.
Absolutely. No, I've long been championing. I do green tea parties and talk about 10 ways to green your routine, and one is to green your brain. And I always say, join NRDC, you know, Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, Sierra Club. And they put out fabulous publications, and they will tell you all you need to know, or at least a lot of what you need to know, just for the price of, you know, joining.
That's right. And, you know, the reporting is really good, and that's becoming harder and harder to get, I think, in today's
world. Good point. I just want to go back to the flooding itself for a few minutes. There's been a lot of concern about what the floodwaters might have turned up in terms of toxins and, you know, pesticide runoff. Is that being addressed yet, or is that just something that enviros are writing about and worrying about?
I was just complaining about that on my Facebook site, but I do see in today's Salon that there's been an article about some of the oil and gas spills and the fracking fluids. Also, I know there's been a little bit of reporting, I believe, on NPR about the Rocky Flats nuclear facility runoff water there, and I haven't had time. Everything's been happening so quickly, and I'm trying to help neighbors and deal with my own flooding issues. I haven't kept up with everything, but these are essential issues. This is our drinking water. These are really dangerous chemicals, and everything's been flooded. So I think we'll be finding out the extent of the damage, or I hope we are.
And I mean, it's fires are devastating, floods are devastating. The problem with floods is, you know, the aftermath, the mold, the mildew. I mean, even if you were lucky enough to not have your home, you know, sort of swept away, there's so many problems that it's hard to imagine where to begin to rebuild. Are there, you know, emergency, you know, task force people from the government, FEMA, trying to help people sort through this yet, or is it yet to happen?
Yep, FEMA's here, and the National Guard has been outside of our house for a long time trying to help. And so there are some things in place, but I have to say, one reason I live in Colorado is because I love dry weather. This rain about drove me crazy, and I'm sure that the molds will also not be lovely to deal with for folks who have to deal with wet carpeting and so on. But, I think we Coloradoans have been historically spoiled in regard to good weather, sunny days, and lack of moldy, humid yuckiness. Mm-hmm. That's why we live here.
Right. Well, and that's the point is, you know, weather where it's not supposed to be, more extreme, devastating, you know, weather events is happening, you know, if not across the country, you know, in pockets all across the country. And so what you thought you were going to get, you know, is not necessary. I mean, maybe people in Seattle and parts of Alaska, you know, up north are a little happier because they've got, you know, less rain, more sun, more warmth. But then again, they could also have more rain than usual. And it's just getting harder and harder to predict the weather, and everyone may be talking about it, but I guess it really comes down to, but what are we doing about it? What are we doing about it? Do you think most Americans, Laura, are really starting to understand that something is terribly wrong and that those climate scientists, 97% of them just might be right?
I would like to think so. And, you know, it's possible I'm naive, but I would like to think so. And I feel like social media is part of that. And just this increasing awareness of the, I guess I'm very interested in the psychology of suffering. I mean, it's really hard to sit here and watch it keep raining and raining, and it makes me more aware of the suffering that happened with Katrina or with other storms, even though they don't impact me. My hope is that empathy can kind of get cohesive, and spurn us into action, that we can pay attention to what's going on, even if it's not in our corner of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a key to that is communication, and that's why I think we need as many channels, literally and figuratively, you know, with these messages as possible, because there is an emergency going on, and to watch the nightly news, other than the news, which is the weather, and yet climate change is not often mentioned, you know, we're not really acting like we've got a planetary national emergency, at least in my neck of the woods, and I'm supposedly in one of the greener pockets of the country, and you are too, I guess, in the greater Boulder area in Colorado. But I don't know, maybe we should check back with you in a few weeks and see if you're hearing people starting to say, oh my gosh, versus this incredibly destructive drought, fires, and now flooding. Oh my, you know, fires and floods, oh my. I'm reminded of Joseph Rome, who is the great blogger and writer and editor at Climate Progress. He's written many books, and one of them is Come Hell or High Water. Come Hell and High Water, actually, is what the title of the book is. And, you know, can't help but, you know, have that evoked right now. And so my sympathy, my empathy, my best wishes for digging out, but yet also, you know, for people starting to really wake up and smell the carbon.
I love it, and I'm with you there.
Thanks so much, Laura. I really appreciate your joining us. And really, best of luck to you out there, and we'll be thinking about you. You're in our prayers, all of you affected, and I guess you're one of the luckier ones with, thankfully, no injury to family or bodily harm, just probably some property damage, but certainly some other people are suffering even more so. So best of luck with all of that, and really appreciated your article. Again, it's on Earth. You can get that by subscribing to NRDC. I imagine it's probably on their website. NRDC stands for the Natural Resources Defense Council. We'll mention them in our next segment, because coming up right after the break is my former producer for EcoTalk. We were on Air America, and NRDC was our partner. So this is kind of a Flash from the Past show today. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Stay with us. Oh, yes, it could. And aren't we seeing the results?